Welcome to this Albion Raw podcast special with me, Alan Wares, and I'm delighted to be joined by Darren Balcombe, who is the football liaison officer at Sussex Police. Darren, welcome to the Reverb Studios. How are you?
Hi, Alan. No, good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Okay, great. Now, we've been on the show before, and you've explained bits and pieces as to what it is you do and how you go about it, but could you just give us a reprise on that? What is the nature of your job, and how do you go about doing it?
Well, for those who have listened to the show before, I've been looking after Brighton of Albion for just coming up to 19 years now. It's my 19th season. And my role is to be the link from the police to the club and, more importantly, the fans of Brighton of Albion. What that entails is that myself and my team will be out and about on match days, both home and away, to either assist with supporters or to advise when we're away from home the local police forces, and to have that continuous point of contact for supporters, young and old.
So when it comes to the beginning of the season and the fixture list has come out, I mean, that's probably the starting point of each season for you. Who do you sit down with first and foremost? Do you plan the season as a whole? Do you then sort of do individual matches? How do you actually start to plan what's coming up?
We get the fixtures probably about 2 or 3 hours before they get publicised in the papers and on the TV. Mm-hmm. So I will then look at the fixture list and I will categorise the games in regards
to... Based on what?
The categorisations are based on history with the clubs, based on information I get from other police forces, based on the information I get from Brighton of Albion and from the opposing club. And also that can be time of day. It can be whether it's a weekend or midweek. It can be certain times of the year, you know, especially in the Championship where we weren't getting full houses away end at the beginning, but summer in Brighton, if you've got a game in August, September, it's quite attractive for people to come down. And it's not just what we look at, the policing of football is not just at the stadium, it's the policing of the city as a whole, which is probably as important to Sussex Police than actually the stadium itself.
So within that role, if you're talking about sort of like, you know, you're picking the games and seeing what's going to happen and who's playing what when and what have you, and with the added thing of making sure there's obviously public safety across the city, how's the division of labour within your team work out? Who does what?
I create a report to my bosses. That will have been in conjunction with the safety operations team at Brighton of Albion to make sure we're thinking around the same things. If there are any disagreements, then it goes up a level with regards to the bosses. But by and large, when having done it for so long and with the same people at Brighton of Albion, we're more or less there. What we do have a caveat is, and especially this year with the Premier League and last year in the Championship, so many games get moved for TV. So we look at the TV schedule and when the Premier League are supposed to, the emphasis on supposed to, announce when the TV games are, because that does have a bearing on actually what the categorisation and actually the resources that we may put on a game, it will change.
Do you have any say, either sort of first or last say, when Sky put in a match, well, it's not in a request, it's a demand, and say, right, we're going to move this match. What's the level of say you have in it?
We've got to have some real strong reasons and rationale to go against TV schedules. And it would have to be backed up with good evidence of that.
Has that happened?
It happened once about 7 years ago when they wanted to play Southampton at Withdean. Must have been 8 or 9 years ago, actually. And they originally wanted it on Good Friday, moving it from a Saturday, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we went to them and the club basically said to us, have we got any concerns? We go back to the club if we have or we haven't. I think it has happened once last year where the TV companies will ask that we'd like to put this game, this game, this game. Please speak to your local police if they have any problems. I can't recall what the game was, but there was one game where we said actually we wouldn't prefer it at that time. It was probably a Saturday 5:30 kickoff, and in the end they didn't choose that game. It wasn't right because of us stopping it. So
it wasn't a case of they choose a game and then just say, right, sort it out.
No, in fairness to the Premier League, I mean, the club are in a difficult position because obviously they're a member of the Premier League or the Championship. We have to work with the club in regards to making sure the right number of police are on the games and depending on when the games are. But the, we do have a say in the TV schedule. But it can't be more. It's got to be more than, oh, we don't want that club at this right. time.
Okay. So for the home match with Palace this year, obviously this is the one you were probably going to look to zero in on most, just because of, you know, the ongoing rivalry. It's not yep. so you're picking on Palace. It's, you know, no. it's just, you know, we've got to look that in context. So who did you liaise with? I mean, did you have any sort of extra special measures that were put in place, and whatever they were, why do you see that they were considered necessary?
Well, what we do, we go back when the fixtures come out in June, actually March, April time, we get a... Well, the club get a fixture schedule for next season. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say who you're playing, but it tells you the dates of the games, match day 1 to match day 38, obviously with the Premier League. And we get asked then, club get asked, and we get asked if there are any dates we want to avoid, local rivalries on certain days. We stipulated and we asked the club to put Crystal Palace to be a midday kickoff on a Sunday.
This is before the fixtures came out.
Yes,
you asked for
absolutely.
It.
Yes.
Okay. When you say we, do you mean Sussex Police, or was this in conjunction with the Met? Or
no, it was we. I don't have any say in the away games.
Okay.
So the home force will have to make their own representations with their club for any games which Brighton are involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So with this one, we try and avoid things like Pride, mm-hmm. Peel. Which is Lewis Bonfire, our operation
right.
name for Lewis Bonfire.
Right.
Knowing that we could be in the same league as Crystal Palace, we had Crystal Palace on a midday Sunday the last time.
2013,
we played them.
Yeah.
And that, by and large, went well. So we wanted to replicate that this time.
Okay. So what happened that it wasn't put there? Is it just one of those things that you think, well, this is what we wanted, but we're not getting it? Or
The issue we had, it was they gave us a midweek fixture.
Mm.
So that means there was a game on the Saturday, so we couldn't move it to the Sunday because there were already a league fixtures on the Saturday.
Sure.
And then it was obviously the following Saturday, and it happened to be the first midweek game of the Premier League.
Right.
So the Premier League has no midweek games up until the 28th of November, and the first midweek game we had in the Premier League was Crystal Palace. Now, a night game is better than a Saturday game. From a policing point of view, it's not ideal, but
a night game on a working day, you mean, rather than a weekend game?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. But we had no wriggle room. We couldn't move it. We can't say, as a police force, we can't say we don't want that game on the 28th. We want it moved to a Sunday, because you look at the schedules, when would they have played it?
Mm.
It just wasn't possible, so we were stuck with what we had.
Sure. I mean we'll get back to because I do want to major on, you know, what happened that night. But do you happen to know if the Met put in a similar request for the game up at Selhurst Park to have the same, you know, be a Sunday midday?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know, no.
Okay. All right, well, like I said, we are going to concentrate here on what happened that day, and I do appreciate you coming in to explain things. So, irrespective of what later happened, did you receive any specific intelligence as to what certain groups on either side or individuals were planning?
What I wanted to concentrate on the night was engagement with supporters
mm-hmm.
before the game. Now, what we did for the game in 2013 was we had a supporters group meeting, and we invited official supporters groups and also, I would call them unofficial supporters group. I mean, like a representative from North Stand Chat.
Okay.
We had a look at the coach companies and the coach groups that travel to away games with Brighton mm-hmm. and get represented from them. Similarly, we did that for Crystal Palace as well.
Invited Palace fans.
Palace fans, including the Homesdale Fanatics, the safety officer from Crystal Palace, the operations manager, and the safety officer from Brighton, my boss, and the match commander who was going to be looking at the Amex on the day.
Hmm.
To talk about intel is something which we would never talk about in public in regards to what was going on, but it formulates the plans that we have for policing, and we share a certain amount of it where it affects the club so that the club can look at it from a stewarding point of view. So intel is a fantastic thing at times, but it's almost imprecise.
Mm.
And if you concentrate on specific intelligence, you actually miss the bigger picture of the fans that want to come to the game and actually watch the match. So my take on it and my advice to my bosses was, what we want to do is we want to, A, speak to the fan group so they can pass on what we want to achieve, because a goal commander for the police will always set out a number of objectives. So it's almost put the objectives on the table. This is what we want to achieve. How do we do it? The supporters group meeting was well attended, including the LGBT groups from both Crystal Palace and Brighton
Proud
as well.
Seagulls and Proud Eagles. Seagulls, and
yes. Unfortunately, Homesdale Fanatics didn't come.
Right.
But that is their choice.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't mandatory.
Did they say they were going to?
We were led to believe they were going to.
Right.
And we had email contact and let them know it was where the meeting was. And there was no representatives from the Homesdale Fanatics there. As I say, that's entirely their choice. They are a supporters group from Palace, and we'd be wrong not to invite them to any meeting that we did.
Okay, so you can't sort of specifically say on intel. So, you know, during the day itself, I mean, how was the for you as a police officer? How was the build up to you? I mean, where did the flashpoint start happening? Where and when?
The issue with the Brighton Crystal Palace game is people are expecting flashpoints. And normally the expectation is a lot less than the realisation. And we have to make sure that we police accordingly to that. So sometimes a reaction by police can cause an overreaction by supporters. That's just in any football.
Do you feel that happened that day?
No, I don't. I don't feel it happened, because what we were doing is we made sure we had police in certain areas at the flash points where it could be. The railway stations, both Falmer and Brighton, Lewis. We also had officers at East Croydon starting in the morning to see what groups were coming down. And that's positive and negative groups. That's to allow commanders in Brighton that actually, yeah, you've got a group who've just got on the train, the fast train from East Croydon, they'll be down in 50-odd minutes. You know, there's no issues with those people.
Sure.
We were very careful not to designate pubs, because I don't like that. I don't like saying Sussex Police say you can go to that pub. That being said, a lot of landlords and landladies didn't want Crystal Palace fans in the pub.
Are we talking ones around sort of mostly around the station here? That's what you're talking about.
Around the railway station, there'll always be home pubs.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I think that's...
Well, the thing is, when I've been to games, you know, at the Albion, there's I can't say that anyone really specifically says we're a home pub only. I mean, is anyone... There are
around the... As you come out the railway station, they've even got it on there.
Okay.
Thing, home fans only.
I'm not talking about just for the Palace game. I'm talking about all games.
No, all games. It's not just for Palace. They want to have home fans only in there. In fairness to them, again, it comes back to the habitualness of a football fan. They will go to that pub.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for the landlord. They know they're going to get... There's probably 6,000-7,000 travel on the train from Brighton to Falmer every week, so they know a high proportion will be going in their pubs. So what we did is we spoke to some landlords, and the pubs down West Street area, Yates's, Wetherspoons, tend to have away fans. So we publicised that, that as opposed to saying these are the only away pubs.
So no decent Brightonian will go to those places.
Well, because I'm sure there's lots of other pubs in the lanes or whatever. You had Crystal Palace fans in as well.
Yeah.
But as football fans like to be, you know, some football fans like to travel in groups and they like to have a good sing-song, then those pubs were quite big to do that for them.
So those particular pubs you're talking about, wherever they were in the lanes, and so there was no real major flashpoints. You know, there was Palace fans, and you know, you think, well, you know, to be kept an eye on, not necessarily because of what they're doing, but because of, you know, whatever that could attract. But you're saying that during the day, until a given point, we're talking about sort of just people having a few beers ahead of the game.
When obviously being a night game, you get. Some people take the day off or half a day off. So we had fans from both sides in the city from, I'd say, about 1-2 o'clock. Now, that's an awful long time, you know, 6-7 hours. To for those who want to drink. So we just have to, and this is not football policing, this is just normal nighttime economy policing. You have to monitor and make sure the landlords and landladies are doing their bit in regards to the alcohol being served, drunkenness in their pubs.
And you say that whether they were football fans or not.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. We do that on a Friday, Saturday, you know, in the summer. It'd be exactly the same. The landlord and landlady in old money, DPS as they call them now. It's up to them to run their pubs. It's not for us to tell them how to run their pubs. It's only for us to tell them if they've run their pubs badly, and then we can deal with it through the licensing committee. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I'd say totally, the licensed premises in Brighton were excellent. The Brighton Crime Reduction Partnership, which is their pub watch scheme, were brilliant in regards to engaging with the licensees. Mm-hmm. And we had meetings with them, and we knew where we were and what to do. We knew the Palace fans were going to go down to the West Street area by and large. And they did, yeah.
Okay, because I mean, we've seen sort of pictures of the ultras, the so-called ultras, with their banner across Queen's Road,
yes,
taking the city, obviously. But they, I think there was either complaints from them or certain Palace fans after the event, and I want to get to, you know, we'll go through the events of the evening, but after the event, they were talking about their treatment before the game. They felt that the police were harassing them and things like that. Can you comment on that?
This is
the build
specific?
Up during the afternoon. What their complaint was, I'm not 100% sure, but
right. I mean,
I'm not talking specifically about the ultras. I'm talking about Palace fans generally, which I think may have included one or two ultras.
We were very clear that football fans who want to come and watch the game and behave in the city. And when I say behave, it doesn't have to be please and thank yous, yes sir, no sir. Mm. We're always welcome.
Sure.
Anyone that wasn't there or for ulterior motives, then we wouldn't tolerate. Now, it would be wrong for me to say that the Palace Ultras in its entirety are in that bracket, because that's not the case. We have to treat people on an individual basis.
Okay.
Or if they're acting as a group, i.e. four or five people, we'll treat them because mm-hmm. they're acting in tandem.
Sure.
I've got to be honest. There were some elements of that from both sides,
right.
from Brighton and Palace,
yes.
which police officers dealt with by either words of advice or there were some arrests.
Right.
But by and large, the mood downtown, south of the clock tower was very Palace based, and north of the clock tower was very Brighton based.
Okay. So, in that sense, the fact that there was that kind of segregation, for want of a better term, through the city, the afternoon, by and large, was relatively peaceful compared to how it could have been done in any other in another way.
It was going exactly how we expected it to be, and how the game on the Sunday at midday also
right.
was.
Sure. Okay, so... I got to, because I mean, I when you expect a flashpoint, I'm thinking, well, I could stick around the station, but, you know, that is one of the flashpoints. I really, you know, I'm an old fart now, and you know, I'm really not interested in, you know, sticking around when these things happen. So, like I say, well, I got to the ground for about, I don't know, half five, quarter to six. Most things appeared fairly peaceful outside the ground until, you know, most people had gone in. It didn't actually feel like a sort of teeth gnashing derby. It really didn't. But the first we knew of any issue, certainly was at the ground, was when rook scarers and flares went off inside the stadium. And my first thought was that stewards hadn't done their job properly in allowing these things to sort of like come in. But we later learned that an exit gate was opened. We've seen the sort of a quick video of that, but could you fill us in with more details to actually what happened in that incident?
What was quite interesting, you talk about the rook scarers.
I assume they're rook scarers.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, they are. We've got some of them, and I was hoping to bring one along today.
Well, just to scare me.
Well, yeah, to show you how big they were. They're 6 centimetres.
That's 2.5 inches in old money.
And that's how big they are.
And then cylindrical, what, sort of like...
Exactly.
About half an inch across.
Good for radio, that.
Yeah, I know. Okay, it's that big. Yeah, and about half inch across and about 2.5... And cylindrical, kind of a mini tube, yeah?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So your point being is that they are, if you really want to hide them, they're undetectable.
They're very difficult with a search at a football ground without doing a full... strip search and having the grounds, and obviously a steward is not able to do that,
sure.
and we have to have really decent grounds to do that. You're not going to be able to. They are very difficult. We can use pyrotechnics dogs, which I know the club do, as a deterrent, and
Flares and smoke bombs did get in. I mean, are they, what size physically are they before they go off?
They're slightly bigger. The smoke grenades are slightly bigger. Mm. In fairness,
they still got through. A few got through.
Well, there was. I think there's around 9 that got let off. Mm-hmm. In the stadium. We know that it was by 3 people. Because we've actually looked at the footage,
right?
And 2 of those people have now been identified,
right? I mean, I want to come to sort of like the aftermath of the arrests and police investigations later, but with the regards to the footage that we saw of the exit gate happening and people coming in, as far as you can say, because it's, I understand it's an ongoing investigation, what actually happened?
I'm not trying to sway this one, and I can't comment on stuff which is Brighton Hove Albion related. That's a safety officer side of it. We, as a police force, are there to support the club in respect of their operation. So it's something really which A, is part of the investigation from a criminal point of view, but B, would be wrong and amiss of me to comment on from a stadium point
of view. Okay, but what can you say about it?
All I can say is what the footage you've seen, I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
A number of people did get in without tickets being checked. 2 stewards were injured. Some receiving hospital treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, those stewards are now fine. The stewards on the night, I will say, and I've said in other meetings, did a fantastic job.
Mm.
They are football stewards. They're not police officers. They're not wearing the pads and the helmets that some riot cops would wear.
Mm.
And they don't deserve that kind of treatment that night or anybody.
Were they Brighton stewards or Palace stewards?
There was a mixture of Brighton and Palace stewards working that night.
Right, okay.
But I don't know the exact setup of that gate.
Okay. Well, assuming that we can accept the fact that a storming of an exit did happen, it's therefore not illogical to conclude that there was around 100 to 150 Palace fans outside with tickets, mostly with tickets, who were denied access to the stadium. Another a complaint that's come across on social media is there was the element of kettling. You know, fans who couldn't get into the ground couldn't go anywhere or do what they wished to do. So whose idea was it to keep everyone in one place, and why was that done?
I'm aware there is possible civil litigation in regards to this. We've been made aware on social media by the Football Supporters Federation.
Mm-hmm.
That solicitors have been instructed by the Palace Trust. And because of that, it'd be wrong for me to comment on it at this stage, because we've not seen this letter. I checked this morning with my bosses. We still haven't received this letter that mm-hmm. We were told we were getting. So we don't know what the complaint is yet, and until we know what the complaint is,
do you feel that kettling, this what we call kettling, you know, the hemming in of people? Do you feel it could be part of this?
They are making, according to the tweet from Football Sports Federation, they're a letter of complaint about several points of the policing of the Palace game.
Mm.
I am probably expecting they will be wanting to ask questions about that area in regards to what happened there. Yes.
So the fact that there's a threat of litigation means that you can't actually comment on this?
I can't really, because it would be wrong of me to comment on that side of it. That's above my pay grade, to be honest with you, Alan.
Mm.
And until we know what actually the complaint letter says, I can't really go any further on that aspect of it.
Okay, well, I mean, I've got to look at a what-if here, but if the letter doesn't actually mention this, are you happy to put out there sort of like an answer to the ongoing queries as to why people felt that they were being kettled?
I think the best way of that being done is the individuals, because there's a lot of stuff on social media from a lot of people retweeting and sending pictures and what have you. It really is down to the individual to send a letter in to either the club or the police, exactly stating what their issue is,
mm-hmm.
What their points they want raised, and doing it that way.
Okay.
I'm not going to speak for Sussex Police over the actions of other officers, and I can't address 150 to the numbers you were quoting, what their issues are. Because I wasn't one of the officers who was involved in that area on that night. So if there are wrongdoings by officers, if there are wrongdoings by Sussex Police, then quite rightly there's a right to reply through the correct channels.
Okay. I mean, can you tell me what the reason behind keeping all those fans out of the ground was?
The safety officer closed the gates.
Right.
That's the reason. The club said that the gates were now closed.
Because they'd been stormed earlier.
I'm guessing it was a decision made by Brighton of Albion. They've closed the gates. In support, we supported that. The match commander was fully aware. We were fully aware of the conversation that I had. But the ultimate decision would be made by Brighton of Albion.
Right.
So once a safety officer, who is primacy over everything at that ground, makes a decision, then we support that. And we deal with the other side of it, whatever we have to deal with.
Which in this instance is, you know, sort of making... Well, like I say, I mean, because like I say, there's 150 Palace fans outside.
Yes.
And this is where then the police take over. Because when, for instance, a door... And I'm not necessarily even specifically this issue, but when the doors are closed and it's the Albion that is, or the football club decides to do so, I assume that obviously that it's done... in liaison with the police, or is it just a case of, no, we've got to close the door? Then police would have to react to a certain situation, don't they?
Yeah, we're not going to hear about it after it's done. The club will be in conjunction with the match commander over every aspect, whether it be an ejection, whether it be a fire alarm going off somewhere. They will liaise with the match commander, yes.
Mm. Okay. In the aftermath of all that was going on, and like I say, there's we're talking about... the gates being sort of opened, the exit gates being opened, the people being kept in and what have you. One of your colleagues did tweet about what was alleged to have been found on an unnumbered Palace fans. And the tweet was later deleted and an apology ultimately issued. But I think for the rest of us, and I think we'd say this as Palace and Brighton and fans of any football club, would say this is... not a good example of police information giving, and worst, it was blamed on information received from the club. Bearing that in mind, how did the information come to be put into the public, and do you feel that a better sense of due diligence should have been applied before posting that?
Well, we apologised twice. I think we apologised through the media, through our media.
Your comms department.
And Mr. Barry, our ACC, apologised again before this game, the FA Cup game. And yes, I agree. At the time, I'll say it was said in good faith.
Mm.
The information came in. However, we've looked at the way we do our checks and measures in regards to quantifying information that comes in, because you can imagine a lot of information comes in at a lot of time. At the time of that, there was the issues outside the away end and the issues going into the away end. That's no excuse. And yes, I would say that we have looked at the way we deal with things like that. And
it didn't exactly cover Sussex Police in glory, did it?
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. What I will say is... and I think the tweet you're referring to is from Mr. Nelson. And I'll say this, he's a good man. He's a good man, Mr. Nelson, and he's a fan of football.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is he was the chief inspector that took the policing from the Withdean to the Amex.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, albeit I was obviously part and parcel in regards to the aspects of as the stadium was built with Richard Hebbard working alongside us, he was the command officer who made that happen from a policing point of view. And I think if we take away what happened that night, which wasn't good, you think of all the other matches we've had at that stadium and the compliments we've had on the policing and stewarding.
Mm.
And it's testament to him.
Sure.
So it wasn't good on the night. But I will say, and I've seen on social media... people thinking that the police are trying to set fans up. I can assure them, and I can assure Palace fans, Brighton fans who have come out in sympathy for Palace fans,
mm-hmm.
And you don't often have that, do you?
No.
that wasn't the case, but we put our hands up that, and we apologise for that.
Okay, I mean, along those lines then, specifically on that, what lessons are there to be learnt in terms of information given and sort of specifically through social media? I mean, have you guys actually sort of sat down and said, right, here's what we're going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
What we've done is the club obviously were quite vocal in the press, the open letter to the Argus, which the Argus put on the front page, and obviously in the programme of the game after, I can't remember which game it was, but the same letter was in there that Paul Barber wrote, obviously explaining the club's position and disappointment with Sussex Police. My Twitter feed is one that I like to have the banter with, but we do, for this game that we've just had, we sat down with the club and we made sure there was a single version of the truth in regards to messages beforehand, how they were put out, how they were done. You'll probably see on my Twitter feed, I wasn't as... My tweets went down somewhat.
They weren't quite so jocular either.
They weren't quite so jocular because we knew this was a tense match.
Sure.
And what I didn't want to do was make fun of anything which people might have perceived was the police...
It's almost dismissing the previous...
Exactly.
Sure,
exactly.
I understand the point.
So what we wanted to do is we made sure that the two club websites put the messages out that we wanted, as you know, the clubs to do, and we signposted people to that.
Okay. As a result of the evening itself, how many arrests were made on either side through the day and into the evening? And have all those who you wish to identify, especially with the exit break-in, has everyone been identified?
On the night, I think it was 6 arrests.
Of which side?
I think 4 were Brighton, 2 were Palace. Mm-hmm. From memory, I'll have
and
to...
And was this at the ground or in town earlier?
In total.
Right.
What we did after that, we sat down with the club. The club have got excellent CCTV. We have our own evidence gathering as well. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't only the area at the South Stand, there was an area on the North Concourse with a lot of Brighton fans came to confront the Palace group as they were walking up the what we call the emergency ramp by the Memorial Garden.
Yep.
So we viewed all that, and then thinking we'd have some time for a post-match investigation, Jermaine Genus pulls out Crystal Palace ball in the FA Cup draw, which was helpful.
Why did you say helpful?
Well, I joke. That's me going back to a joking side.
Right.
From the point of view that we had now a...
You had an opportunity to put it right, you feel?
Well, we'd had that, but I'm more looking at finding people who have actually let the clubs down.
Yeah.
And straight away, in my head, the timescale, I've got to get this done, or we've got to get things done by January the 8th. Because this is now the next time we're going to play Palace, as opposed to later on in the season. So working with the Met and Brighton and Crystal Palace, myself and another colleague, we identified a number of people that we wanted to that actually their actions rather antisocial at best, should we say, criminal at worst. We worked 2 Crystal Palace games over Christmas, myself and a colleague. We worked the Crystal Palace Arsenal and Crystal Palace Man City game.
Yeah.
At those games, we identified 2 of the main protagonists for the pyrotechnics.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the last game, January the 8th, we identified another chap who was seen to allegedly, should we say, because it's an ongoing investigation, use pyros in the stadium and assault a steward.
Sure.
So my message is, at the moment, although there were 6 arrests on the night, and there were 7 arrests at the game just gone, we're still looking at the footage.
So were those arrests at the game just gone, were they for incidents on that evening or incidents relating to the original November game?
One of them was an incident relating to the original game.
Right. Okay, so we've read that some Crystal Palace fans were sent letters on the day saying, you're not going to be allowed into the Amex, so don't bother coming down to Brighton. Who would have sanctioned that? Was that a club? Or was that the police that...
Club. It's a club decision. Who goes in that ground is a club. I am
based
not...
on what information?
Well, the information would be based on the video footage, i.e. the camera work, and the identification of those people.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the law as generally... let's suppose, and I'm going to come back to how many there are in a minute, but in the law generally, if a football fan is banned from... either their home club or all football, What are the steps? What's the law in place that states what the police can and can't do in terms of the bans that they can put out there? Or does that have to go through the judiciary? Or can you just give us an overview as to how a football banning order is put in place?
There's two types of football banning order that the police can put on. A football banning order, one can be if you're arrested for an offence at football and you go to court and you're found guilty or plead guilty, the police or the Crown Prosecution Service can apply for a football banning order. Similar to drink driving, that if you get caught drink driving, you get a fine or you get some kind of punishment. Mm-hmm. The actual driving ban is ancillary to what you've done, but it is given more or less unless a solicitor can argue your case that you are likely to get a ban anyway. Mm. It's not a given for a drink driving, but it is more more accepted. With football, the ban, we then have to put that forward to the court, the reasons why we want the ban, and sometimes areas we don't want that person to be in when football's on. And that has to relate to, there's two tests you have to have. One, that it's football related.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, that a ban would prevent violence and or disorder in the future.
Sure. Okay.
The second ban is a civil ban. It's the same as an ASBO. It's exactly the same principle as an ASBO. Whereas if we have a pattern of behaviour by a person and we have to document that through what we see, what we've got on CCTV or our evidence gathering, we then put a civil case to summons that person to court and say, we are putting you before the court because we believe you should have a football banning order and this is the reason why. And you have to have a number of instances to prove that.
And who has to judge that? Who decides that?
That goes to a magistrate as well.
Right, a local magistrate.
Yes.
Right, and so it's not something that you can actually arbitrarily apply yourself. So these letters that the Palace fans received weren't along the lines of you can't come to Brighton.
No, not at all.
And there was no threat of arrest because they came from the football club.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Any club ban, and Brighton have club bans, Brighton will ban a person from home games and they'll prevent them from buying away tickets through Brighton.
Sure.
If I see that person at an away game in the ground, I have no power at all as a police officer to arrest that person or to tell that person they shouldn't be there. Mm. It's a club issue.
So when it comes to certain things being put in place, and including the whole going through the judiciary in order to get bans, and like I say, what seems to come across, and like I say, it appears, I think it's the kind of the lack of information that concerns people is, and I suppose even a concern about the relative slowness of how this thing is all happening, is that have you got a sense of a timeline as to the fact that you think, right, okay, we're going to close this investigation down now, we've got all the people that we think we can get, and this is what we're going to do now, we're going to, I don't know, dawn raid or something, I'm being sort of fantasy laden here, but, you know, sort of, where are we at exactly in terms of actually, you know, the how far through the investigation you're at?
Well, what we did was we sat down with my bosses and we looked if we needed to do a full post-match investigation, which is time-consuming, costly, and we have to balance it against what offences we have and actually how much it's going to cost the taxpayer.
Mm.
And that's important. That's very important. Obviously, a bit with a football club, there are other avenues you can do. We have information sharing agreements with the football club, and if we have people, especially on their footprint, causing antisocial behaviour or criminal offences, we can give those details to the club, and they can take action if they so wish. If I give information to Brighton of Albion, they make the decision whether or not that person gets banned. It's not a police thing. They have their own tariff system in regards to what they've done, whether it be failing to comply with a steward or whatever. There's a number of things, and they will deal with it that side. What I am hoping to do, we've had lots of CCTV to view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a number of officers on with cameras. The Amex has got 140-plus cameras. You know, that takes a long time. The issue we've had, obviously, the first game, November the 28th. Then we have the Christmas period when everything seems to close for a week, 10 days.
Mm.
But we've also had a lot of games as well.
We have, yeah.
So the question for my bosses is, do we bring more people off the streets to assist Darren and the spotters to do it, or do we allow Darren and the spotters to do it and make sure that we keep a realistic view of what we're doing. Mm. Now, what I would say is we've had 13 arrests at the moment from these two games. I think Brighton have banned 11 or 12 people. I think Palace had banned or sent letters to people about the same number. So we're talking about 45, 46 people there in total that have had some kind of punishment, perhaps is the word, some kind of sanction from going to football.
Sorry, hang on. You said Brighton have 11, Palace have a couple. Sorry, where's 45, 46? I'm a bit confused
there. No, Palace had a similar amount, I said.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
sorry.
So I think it was about a similar number. So if we're talking about 20 or 23 who didn't go to the last game, plus the 13, we're looking at 35 to 40 in total.
Sure, okay. So are you satisfied in terms of future public order issues that both clubs are actually doing what they need to do?
I'm only concerned about Brighton and Albion. I'm not concerned about Crystal Palace. I'm only concerned, as I said to you before, in regards to when we get the fixtures and when we speak to the clubs. My concern is the wrong word. My want is that we work with Brighton and Albion to deal with any antisocial elements. Arrest is the final option for me. You know, if we can deal with the antisocial stuff and deal with it that way through the clubs, that's much better than having to go to court and give him banning orders. Contrary to popular belief, I don't give banning orders out, or I don't apply for banning orders, shall I say, to every football fan that gets arrested. We have different ways we can deal with stuff, whether it be diverted through the Albion and the community in regards to youngsters. I've just had a meeting this morning, or a brief meeting, regards some youth diversion stuff we're going to do with the Albion and the community. That is my role. The last sanction is arrest, and the ultimate last sanction is a banning order. Unfortunately, when we talk about people who go to football and how we deal with people, some people will need banning orders because they just will not behave at football, and they'll get shame on their club and they will give their club a bad name. Some clubs, shall we say, reputation wise and we can all name clubs that we believe have a reputation, it's probably because of what's happened many years ago. So these people are fueling that reputation, which ultimately means more police are put on events, which ultimately you can't win as a police officer at football, because
sure.
Because what you do is you try and, as we do at the Amex, put as less. I mean, we had six officers on for the Bournemouth game,
right?
You know, six officers for near enough 30,000. So
I mean, if we're going to talk about this, let's name names here. We're talking about, you know, Millwall with a huge sort of track record of, you know, sort of, you know, going back to the 70s of doing what they did. And yet, I can't help feeling, maybe I'm looking the other way, but I can't help feeling that by and large they behave themselves when they've been
to
the Amex.
Well, I think what you do now, absolutely, what you do now is you look at and you name Millwall, and you're right, the track record, but the track record, that's the 70s. How long are we now? I lose count.
40, you know. 40 years onwards,
but
absolutely.
What happens if Millwall does something now, it's major news, because people are, oh, Millwall, that's Millwall. And we have to, and that's why I'm very proactive in looking at the areas that we need to, when we need to. I'm not saying there's an inherent problem at Brighton, there isn't. But the Brighton Palace game, if one of the things we could have done for anyone we stop checked or anyone we spoke to, if we had a checklist of what we asked them, right, why did Brighton Palace, tell me about the 70s. Yeah. Tell me why this rivalry is there.
Mm.
And they, most of them won't know.
Sure.
You know, and we have to, and that's where I go back to the banning order stuff. Not all football fans who go to court will get a banning order from Sussex Police. But when I go for a banning order, or where Sussex Police goes for a banning order, we will outline the reasons why. Now, I hear on social media when a banning order happens, that's outrageous. But I hear the other side when I speak to these people, and sometimes they say, you've done me a favour. Because they're going down a path which actually is a difficult path to come away from.
Sure.
So
it's almost an addiction.
It is exactly that. It's an adrenaline addiction which some people will take too far. It's no different to a Friday, Saturday night where some people will have a lot to drink and they want to fight. Other people will want to have a drink, have a kebab and walk home.
Yeah. Last couple of questions then, Darren. What is the thinking behind the particular sort of, I'm not sure if it's clockwise or anti-clockwise, way of leaving the ground when Palace are in town?
The thinking is something we plan with the club. Again, it's a club thing, but I can definitely talk about this one. It's if we have to do a holdback for Crystal Palace fans to go to the railway station, that's the quickest way.
Right.
It is the quickest way. It's the easiest way. We've got the emergency ramp to take people down. So actually, that way is the quickest way to go.
Okay. In the great scheme of things, you know, we touched on it earlier, but bearing in mind what happened, like I say, it was a pretty unpleasant sort of thing. I mean, it was nothing like as bad as it used to be in the 70s and 80s, where guaranteed fights at Hove Park after every game, even if there was only 8,000 people in the ground. But what lessons have been learned from, well, obviously you can only speak for Sussex Police, but what lessons have been learned for all of the action group who police the game?
I think one thing that I will speak for myself on this. One thing I've learned is the Premier League is a massive bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's a massive bubble in regards to the spotlight that is put on the club, the spotlight is putting anything around it. It's headline news. I think I saw a message this morning of some of that 140, 150 journalists were in the media room or at the Amex on Monday
for the cup game
just because of the VAR.
Oh, right.
And other things like that. And it is a massive media spotlight. It is a big circus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a circus you want to be in,
mm-hmm.
Because it's great for the club. It's great for the city.
Mm-hmm.
But from a personal point of view, is I don't want to change the way I police or the way I deal with football fans. So the 28th was a difficult day. It was a difficult day. It was difficult beforehand, and it was difficult afterwards. And as you say, the club quite rightly, as is their right, viewed their opinion on what we'd done. But we do work well together.
Mm-hmm.
And for what happened that day, what we can say is neither side of, should we say, ill intent got together.
Mm.
It didn't look good, but I don't want the 28th to cloud how we police the Amex in any way. I don't want there suddenly to be a knee-jerk reaction in how we police. I don't think there'll be one. We've had many meetings with my bosses in respect of how we police the Amex, and we actually look at that and think, for the last 6 years, because of how well the stewarding and the policing is at the Amex, this is highlighted quite high. Yes, we had to apologise for a couple of things that we said, and we did. And we've put our hands up to that, but actually going forward, we shouldn't change. We've had big games there. We've had 4,500 Arsenal fans at a cup match. We've had big championship matches, which are almost more. The tension is higher there because of the rewards going forward, and we've managed them. And from a policing point of view, we have to look at not just the Amex, we look at the whole of Sussex, particularly Brighton City Centre, but Lewes, which is very popular, and other areas of Sussex. So from a policing point of view, it's a big commitment in the Premier League, but it's one that we are glad Brighton and Albion are in the Premier League, and we look forward to bigger games as well.
Darren Balcombe, thanks very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw.
Thank you.